Serious Talk helps all of us, both professionally and personally, to think seriously about this issue.
The Trump administration backs away from a grim coronavirus toll. It's Thursday, April 9th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Instagram and Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, some relief for struggling businesses. Younger people also can catch the virus. Volunteer scientists, smart thermometers, and robots to help the sick. All this and more on today's VOA Asia. The White House is projecting close to 82,000 COVID-19 deaths in the United States by early August. That's a slightly less grim figure than earlier outbreak models indicated. Experts say that government transparency is essential in communicating with the public during this health crisis, but warn that pandemic modeling is never precise. White House correspondent Patsy Wittakuswara has the story.
A harrowing sight in New York City. Medical workers transporting bodies to refrigerated trucks repurposed as temporary morgues as COVID-19 deaths climb up.
This will be probably the toughest week between this week and next week. And there'll be a lot of death, unfortunately.
Assuming the country implements full social distancing until end of May, the White House Coronavirus Task Force projects close to 82,000 COVID-19 deaths by early August. The model predicts the U.S. may need fewer hospital beds, ventilators, and other equipment than previously projected. However, health experts warn against early optimism and say it's best to prepare for worst-case scenarios.
That Serious Talk helps all of us, both professionally and personally, to think seriously about this issue. It helps us prepare psychologically for what's ahead.
For their coronavirus modeling, the White House reached out to a number of universities, including the University of Texas at Austin. Lauren Myers, head of the university's research team, underscores that pandemic modeling is almost never precise and that these projections are not like weather forecasts.
When you forecast a tropical storm, there's nothing you can do about changing the path of the storm. There are things you can do to protect yourself, but you can't change the course of the storm. When you project that an infectious disease outbreak could lead to a crisis in healthcare or lead to many, many deaths, there are actually measures you can take, things you can do, especially if you act early enough.
Projections rely on good data, and not all countries have the tracking capacity nor the political will to record cases accurately and transparently.
I think that lying about numbers, suppressing science, suppressing doctors, censoring the media, This is the absolute wrong time to be doing that.
South Korea was one of the worst hit countries in the early stages of the pandemic, but has been praised for its effective, aggressive response that includes a swift implementation of mass-scale testing and consistent, transparent messaging to the public throughout the crisis. Patsy Wittakuswara, VOA News.
We invite you to read more on this and all the stories we have on VOA Asia at our website, voanews.com, on Facebook at VOA Asia, and be sure to check out VOA Asia on Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter. These are some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Countries worldwide in different stages of COVID-19 trajectory. Masked crowds fill streets and trains after Wuhan lockdown ends. Japan's state of emergency is no lockdown. What's in it? Chinese tycoon under investigation for challenging top leaders' authority, observers say. COVID canceled his tour, but Asian rapper MC Hot Dog still keeps collecting fans. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more when you visit us on Instagram at VOA Asia, our Facebook page, and our website, that's voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The $2 trillion coronavirus relief package, the biggest economic assistance package in American history, will likely not be enough to save many small business owners struggling to survive through quarantine and shelter-in-place orders. Those shutdowns are a particular problem across rural areas of the United States, where long distances between towns mean the apps and delivery services keeping small businesses open in the cities simply don't work. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
Rural Vermont, where the busy ski season should just be wrapping up. But news reports about the spread of the coronavirus convinced the owner of this vacation rentals company to shut down in mid-March.
This is pretty darn real, and this is something that we have to take very seriously.
Virus hotspot New York City is just a four-hour drive away. So safety came first, says Ellis, even though she could have rented to New Yorkers wanting to flee to Vermont.
It's sad that there's people out there that desperately could have needed us, but for my staff, myself, and our local townspeople, we just are not set up for this.
A huge economic loss for a state that makes $2.8 billion annually from tourism.
Worry more about the tourism industry than almost any other. And there's a real connection between that, the local folks in the economy and the bigger ski areas.
Ellis is one of millions applying for aid in the U.S. Congress's $2 trillion coronavirus package.
It's not a stimulus. This rescue package is really about keeping body and soul together.
Restaurants and bars holding on with takeout deliveries, like this diner in neighboring New Hampshire, and curbside delivery to customers. It's also keeping a pet store, For Your Paws Only, open.
We are now open for curbside service only.
Social media is getting the word out that this family-run business is still up and running, but that can't last forever.
The length of how long this goes on is definitely in the front of our minds. We have to plan, you know, with inventory and things like that, and employees. You have to plan 6-7 months out. We don't know what to do. We don't know how to buy.
Major corporations in big cities are also dealing with the uncertainty of an unprecedented crisis. But the fear is personal for those with an entire business on their shoulders.
What's really terrifying is at this point, people are not booking seasonal rentals for next winter season.
The cost of the coronavirus high in these small towns, where the margins for success have always been narrow. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, journalists in Indonesia say they are risking their lives to cover the COVID-19 pandemic because some local media companies are ignoring internationally observed safety guidelines. A local reporter said the assignment was not worth the risk to his own health. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, while many of those who have died or been infected by COVID-19 have been the elderly, the novel coronavirus also has struck the young. Otherwise healthy younger patients are being hit hard. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports on two survivors, a 33-year-old in Italy and another 44-year-old in the Philippines.
Waving from his apartment window where he's recovering, Andrea Napoli, a young Italian lawyer, was in perfect health, but things changed quickly.
I remember having a normal hearing in court without any kind of symptoms the day before. The same morning I had breakfast, lunch, and then suddenly I felt sick.
Napoli, an active water polo player and jogger, developed a strange fever, dry cough, and felt out of breath. He was hospitalized, then the oxygen in his blood decreased sharply, and he was transferred to the ICU.
I have never had respiratory problems. I have never had particular pathologies. I didn't think it could hit me too, because I've always been very careful with gloves and masks.
At this hospital, doctors managed to stabilize him and move him to a subintensive care unit. Then he was attached, without intubation, to oxygen for the next 9 days nonstop. From Italy to the Philippines, where 48-year-old husband and father Carlo Navarro recounts his battle against the coronavirus.
The scariest moment was maybe it started on the fourth day when people who got admitted at the same time as me, they started dying.
he got infected while visiting Japan with his wife and daughter in late February. The hardest for him, he says, was not being able to have family at the hospital.
We were really in isolation. It's a negative pressure room. So my wife and I had video calls almost every hour. She was checking on me to make sure that I've eaten.
Navarro survived, but otherwise healthy young people around the world have come down with COVID-19 and died. This has surprised doctors and is serving as a warning that anyone could be struck down by the coronavirus.
Now on VOA Asia, a U.S. neuroscientist in the state of Massachusetts was looking for a chance to use his scientific expertise to help fight the coronavirus. Then on the same day the pandemic forced his lab to temporarily close, an idea was born. Mariama Diallo reports.
In the middle of the deadly worldwide coronavirus pandemic, Michael Wells, a 34-year-old neuroscientist, wanted to be useful.
I was looking for opportunities that I could partake in that would allow me to use my background in virus biology. And I hadn't seen anything yet.
Shortly after, he reached out on social media to all scientists willing to lend their expertise. Wells assembled a shareable spreadsheet of volunteers, which so far has about 7,000 members.
What we want to do is be in a situation where every single health official in this country is going to have access to this database, and they can do what they want with it.
And he says some organizations such as endcoronavirus.org are already tapping into the resource.
Creative decision makers can look at that and say, what is my problem right now? And what do I project my problem being in 2-4 weeks? And how do I make sure that I can get these resources online where we have so many people that want to get off the sidelines and be part of this all of society response.
As health workers risk their own lives to treat an increasing number of patients, Wells database offers a way for other professionals who are now on the sideline to join the fight. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia, Vietnam is moving from recipient to donor, as Hanoi is now in talks with the United States to supply it with protective equipment. Besides donating 500,000 masks, Vietnam has sent medical aid to China, Cambodia, and Laos in recent weeks, and announced Tuesday mask donations to Europe. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. In the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic, one sign that social distancing measures may be working is that people's temperatures, a symptom of the virus, are dropping in some cities in the United States. That's according to a smart thermometer company. The data could give health officials an early look as to how the virus is progressing. Michelle Quinn takes a look.
A smart thermometer connected to the internet doesn't sound like something that can help in fighting COVID-19. The user's temperature reading is uploaded to a database where the thermometer company tracks fevers. But Inder Singh, the chief executive of Kinza Health, which makes such a device, recently looked at his fever data in places with strict social distancing measures.
And it's clear, it's very clear. When you start implementing aggressive social distancing activities, stay at home, shelter in place, even bar and restaurant closures, within 3 to 7 days, you see the fever curves level off and start dropping. And that's because you're breaking the chain of infection.
About 2 million people in the U.S. use Kinza thermometers, with more than 100,000 temperatures taken daily. While the company's predictions have not been peer-reviewed, Kinza says its data provides a window into atypical fevers in the U.S. In mid-March, the company's data saw fever clusters in Florida and New York. Kinza doesn't know for sure those were COVID cases, but it's a strong signal, Singh says.
It's like a flashlight going off. It's saying, hey, there's an outbreak. There's an outbreak here. Come look at it. Send the virologists in. Send the test kits.
Singh says his data suggests that in some places, the number of fever cases is leveling off, but still remains higher than normal. That could signal a big problem.
So the worry is that there are small groups of people or there are small communities of people in which viruses are just continue to be passed around. And that could act as a reservoir, that could act as a hiding place for COVID-19. And after we relax those social distancing activities, it could start spreading again.
There's a race on to predict where the virus is going, what measures are working, and when it's safe to open society again.
Open.
This smart thermometer's fever data may be one signal for health officials scrambling to figure out what to address next. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
Collaborative robots known as cobots are becoming big business. Restaurants in the United States and in countries around the world are using robots. According to BIS research, in 2018, the cobot market registered a revenue of nearly $581 million and is projected to reach more than $9 billion by 2024. VOA's Elizabeth Lee visited one restaurant in Los Angeles where robots work as a hostess and a waiter.
This robot hostess named Peanut asks guests to follow closely as it takes them to their table at this restaurant. Once the food is ordered, food is placed on this robot waiter, and off it goes, delivering ingredients to put into a boiling pot of hot soup at this Chinese hot pot style restaurant.
I think it's really cute and novel.
From serving up hot pot ingredients to sushi, there are approximately 22 of these robots from the China-based company Kinon Robots. Across the U.S., and almost 6,000 Kinon robots work around the world. And that's just one of many robot companies geared towards restaurants. This one only speaks Mandarin for now.
Since they're robots, they can be trained to speak any different languages.
There are sensors on the robot to help it navigate around a restaurant without running into things.
The infrared cameras, the laser dot camera, similar to the one used on your iPhone, and also other visual cameras that helps the AI inside to determine what this object is. Is this object moving? How fast is it moving? Is it going to collide with me?
Sensors locate these dots on the ceiling, serving as a GPS of sorts, guiding the robots around the restaurant's twists and turns. Yvonne Tam came to eat here because of the robots.
I thought it would be a more interesting experience. I don't know later on if it becomes a more common experience, how I would feel about it. I might want a human touch or human interaction.
Robots and automation in restaurants may become more common in the future as a cost-saving measure. For now, this hot pot restaurant still needs the human touch to serve guests, while the robots are just a fun way of bringing in the customers for a different kind of dining experience. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Are my pets safe from coronavirus? There's no current evidence that cats and dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria such as E. coli and Salmonella that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia. At age 28, musician Fabi Reina is the founder and editor-in-chief of She Shreds magazine, a publication dedicated to women guitarists and bassists. She also continues to perform in concerts around the world. Karina Befregin met with this inspiring young woman.
Fabi Reina performs on stages around the world, organizes musical festivals, and serves as founder and editor-in-chief of She Shreds magazine.
My goal is to always make sure that we're serving people who are underserved. History holds so many women guitarists that not a lot of people know about. And I think, to be honest, you have to think about who is telling these stories, who is creating history, who is writing the books, who is, you know, at the executive positions making the decisions. And most of the time, more than 90% of the time, it's white males. And so, especially in the U.S.
On the pages of She Shreds magazine, Reina and her team repeat over and over again, women are as good as men and can rock right alongside the guys. But Reina herself says it took her a long time to understand that. Born in Mexico and raised in Texas, Reina now lives in Portland, Oregon. She started playing when she was a child, but she didn't perform as a young musician.
I grew up in a time where boys my age who were 10 or 11 would come up to me and say, you know, girls don't play guitar. And that was normal. That was normal because teachers also taught that.
At 18, she decided not to go to college and instead went on a musical tour across the country with her band. After a year of concerts and gigs, the idea to publish a specialized magazine dedicated to female guitar players was born. It took another 3 years for the first issue of She Shreds to hit the market. Raina has been publishing the magazine for 7 years now, 3 issues a year. But Raina says she gets incredible satisfaction from playing.
I feel like when I play guitar, for me, it's so exciting to find something new and to find something that feels like me and to, like, I don't know, just kind of push myself. And it's nothing makes me more proud of myself than when I challenge myself as a guitarist. And when I, you know, accomplish something through my guitar and through creating music.
Rain is optimistic when it comes to the future of women in the music and guitar industry. She believes times are changing and women will be turning up their guitars and their ability to show off their own talent. After all, rock guitar players like it loud. Karina Befredjian for VOA News, Portland, Oregon.
As people have isolated themselves to avoid spreading the coronavirus, many are continuing their social lives online. The video conference, once the realm of corporate meetings, now acts as a lifeline for communities desperate to connect. Matt Dibble has a look.
On most mornings these days, this couple makes a light breakfast and heads to their living room to practice with dozens of other members of the San Francisco Ballet Company. Since shelter-in-place rules went into effect, the company has met by video conference.
Ballet company in particular, the people you work with, and especially the dancers, they become like family. So at least this offers waking up, turning on your computer, and you still get to chat with them and see them a little bit.
Since the company began sharing these sessions online, there's been an unexpected twist. Fans around the world have had an intimate look at the dancers at work, with some even joining in the practice.
People really want to know who the dancers are, and you just don't get to know that on stage. So even just this little glimpse into your living room or something, where I think you get to see a little bit of who that person is.
These friends first met in the early 80s in San Francisco as activists in a group called the Nuclear Beauty Parlor.
Normally we have a gathering about every other year.
But since social distancing began, they've met each week using Zoom.
Best of luck to Laura.
Thank you. It was a really nice time to hear everybody's take on how they're handling the situation.
The documentary Fantastic Fungi had an eager audience and sold out theaters for its planned release on March 26th.
We pivoted when we heard about this pandemic because people could no longer come to the theater. And we really wanted to continue this feeling of connection.
The solution was a virtual release. People could watch the film at home and participate in live discussions.
We have very good evidence that these polypore mushrooms support immunity.
It was amazing. Probably got 20,000 attendees and participation from 101 countries.
What can mushrooms teach us at a time like this?
Well, the communities survive better than individuals.
And today, technology is helping those communities survive. Matt Dibble for VOA News, San Francisco, California.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter, of course, VOA Asia Facebook. We thank you for spending part of your day with us at VOA Asia. We also like to thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.